Hey, what's going on, everybody? From the College of Professional and Continuing Education at Cal State Long Beach, I'm Dr. Pahol Sukhasakon with Pacing Your Future, a podcast that charts the course of today's most exciting industries and the people that help shape them. Discover the many opportunities within the numerous fields we cover and be inspired by the stories of notable individuals who have paved their own paths. And just like our name suggests, our mission is to pace ahead, be proactive, adaptable, creative, and engaged. Whether you're seeking career insights, industry trends, or are just simply inquisitive, let's pace your future together. And today we're joined by Matt Trapp, who is the CEO of the Harbor Trucking Association, where he has served since June 2021, leading the organization through a transformative period in the drayage and logistics industry. A recognized voice in transportation policy, Matt has appeared on national platforms such as 60 Minutes, PBS NewsHour, and the Bloomberg TV, offering insights on port congestion, regulatory challenges, and fleet electrification. Prior to HTA, he was the vice president of the government programs at Velocity Vehicle Group and director of environmental affairs at the California Trucking Association. With a master's in public policy administration from Cal State Long Beach and a BA in government from CSUS, Matt combines deep policy expertise with a passion for sustainable freight solutions. He also lectures part-time at the Center for International Trade and Transportation, continuing to shape the next generation of logistics professionals. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Go Beach.
Go Beach, go Beach. Let's start off with something fun. Imagine your industry is the main character in a blockbuster movie because it's Los Angeles. What's the plot and who are its main characters?
Well, I was thinking about this, and I don't know if it's a rom-com or a buddy comedy or an action flick, but honestly, I think that when we think about our industry, the supply chain, that is, there's many actors involved, obviously, and you know, we think about kind of the main roles for the trucking industry, the ocean carrier, ocean liner industry, the marine terminals, the port authorities, the state and federal government, your beneficial cargo owners, the shippers, you have the rail, you have ILWU on the docks, many different groups. So I would say it's probably something similar to like an ensemble, truly an action film, well, you know, like The Expendables or something like that, right? So we all have a role and we're all seeking something which is greater efficiency. And that's at the end of the day what we're trying to achieve. So I would say it's probably an action flick with an ensemble cast, the biggest blockbuster of the summer, no doubt. And that's trying to increase throughput and velocity down in the ports of LA and Long Beach, so, and the West Coast in general, not only the Port of Oakland, but also Seattle, Tacoma. Everybody in the industry is of the same mindset. We just want to move containers. And so trying to find that golden ring, so to speak, is really what drives us. How do we get more efficient? How can we be more productive? How can we move more containers per acre? Because all of that equals revenue. The more containers you're moving, the more money overall each of those individuals are going to be making.
Nice. So instead of get to the chopper, it's get to the truck.
Exactly, exactly.
Get to the container.
Yeah.
Anyways,
who is your daddy and what does he do? That's something.
Hey, shout out to Arnold.
Yes.
So for those who may not be familiar, Matt, could you share with us and our audience the mission and vision of the Harbor Trucking Association and describe your role within the organization?
So the Harbor Trucking Association, we're a nonprofit coalition of motor carriers that do business on the West Coast of the United States. So their focus is, you know, our member companies, our trucking companies with a focus on moving containers. And, you know, containers can contain anything you can possibly imagine, right? From ag exports and imports to scrap metal, scrap paper, tennis shoes, electronics, ceiling fans, patio furniture, glassware, anything that you can possibly imagine. So for us in the trucking side of things, while we're a critical component, as mentioned earlier, we're part of a larger ensemble. So for the HTA, our role really is to educate and advocate. And our mission is to really help people understand where they fit in the supply chain as motor carrier operators and how to do better business, how to operate effectively so they're making informed business decisions that are going to help them be successful. So our role is really as an educator. We hold webinars, we hold in-person seminars, we do conferences for motor carrier members. We do our membership meetings. We do a special event each year called Dray Tech, where we highlight technology in the drayage sector, not only on the like truck electrification side, but all the way through trucking management software, other back office, you know, technological fixes. Tech has really made a difference in streamlining and efficiency within companies. So our job really is to not only educate our members about rules and laws and things that they need to follow to be successful, how to think more proactively in their business to be more productive. But it's also to educate decision makers, elected officials, appointed officials, regulatory officials, other groups and coalitions, whether they're shippers groups, whether they're ocean carrier groups, marine terminal operator groups, all of them, again, as we're part of this larger ecosystem, helping them understand what the trucking industry is all about. The drayage trucking industry in particular is also somewhere rural. So really we see ourselves as that educator in that regard and a facilitator. So we'll set up meetings between different coalitions, or we'll host different coalition meetings and really provide that trucking perspective, because everybody knows that trucking is a critical component in the supply chain. Literally nothing moves without trucks. You know, it's a bellwether of the economy. The saying goes, if you bought it, a truck brought it. Everything that we see and feel and touch and smell has typically been moved by a truck at some point in its life cycle. And we like to make sure that people understand what we do. And it's not just big, scary trucks that are 82,000 pounds and you're stuck behind them in traffic. That's a man or woman, a professional who's doing this job, really helping folks maintain the lifestyles they become accustomed to. And we really help people try to understand the challenges that we go through so they can better appreciate and then respond appropriately when dealing either as a consumer of trucking or just as a regular, you know, Joe Smo, Joe Q public person out on the highways, to really get that, like I said, a better appreciation for it. So that's what we do. We try to be that educator. We try to be that facilitator and, of course, an advocate at all times, in all shapes and forms, make sure that the trucking companies are well represented in all levels of government and even, again, in our kind of within our supply chain as well.
Nice, Matt. I mean, so I think one of the things you brought up, and I said it in your bio, but because I'm new to the trucking industry myself, can you explain to both me and the audience maybe what drayage trucking industry entails?
Sure. Yeah. So drayage is a term that comes from cartage, basically, which goes all the way back to the horse and buggy days, more or less, where you had a horse connected to a cart. That would be moving goods, and that was called cartage or drayage. And that term has been used to describe the movement of containers because it's similar. You're putting it onto a chassis. A container goes onto the chassis, and then the chassis hooks up to the truck. So it's all modular. So that term drayage has been very descriptive and has always been used to talk about that truck moving a container. Obviously, there's other parts of the trucking industry. You have less than truckload, you have heavy specialized, out of gauge. Our world can incorporate a lot of that stuff, but we're primarily focused on moving containers. So that container that's either coming off of a ship onto a marine terminal dock, we come in and take that container out of the marine terminal dock to whether it's a warehouse or distribution center or final retail location, or we move it from the rail yards. So same thing, they come off a vessel, they go directly onto rail cars. The rail cars are then taken out inland. Then we'll send a truck to go pick up that container from the rail yard itself. So drayage truly is moving of containers, is the best way to describe it.
Perfect. Because we're sitting down here in Long Beach, and because, you know, West Coast is the best coast, I mean, there's no competition. How does the Harbor Trucking Association influence port trucking operations on the West Coast?
You know, one of the challenges that we run into kind of goes back to that ecosystem that we're talking about, right? Like we're part of the larger ecosystem, but each individual node, let's call it, of the supply chain, each have their own individual interests. Everyone's motivated basically for profit. No one's in this because it's fun, right? At the end of the day, we try to make it fun and entertaining as much, and levity is very important. But each node in the supply chain, again, whether it's the importer, the exporter, the rail lines, the ocean carriers, the trucking companies themselves, the marine terminal operators, even the port authorities, are all really in this to generate revenue. And of course, the byproduct of that is people's stuff and goods movement. And I agree, the West Coast is the best coast. And we've been, you know, we are so well positioned that especially with the predominance of trade coming out of Asia that we're the closest to Asia. And so we've enjoyed that role on the West Coast as being the main conduit for all these things coming out of China or Vietnam or anywhere else in Southeast Asia. And as we've seen some uncertainty with the tariffs that are going on now and lessons that shippers and manufacturers learned during COVID to look at other locations besides just China itself. But still, we're the closest. So Oakland, Seattle, Tacoma, LA, Long Beach, it's actually a shorter trip to go to Oakland and up to Seattle, Tacoma than it could be for coming down to LA, Long Beach. But here in LA, Long Beach, we have a tremendous amount of infrastructure, on-dock rail infrastructure in particular, where you can offload directly from vessels directly onto a train. And then those rail cars can be taken out to St. Louis or Chicago, Dallas, and feed those marketplaces there. So where we try to influence policy or outcomes, really, is through building those relationships with each of those individual nodes, right? The ensemble cast of this movie we're talking about. And we need to maintain good relationships because in order to affect policy and change, you know, especially in Sacramento or even on the federal level, you need to have pretty strong coalitions of like-minded individuals. And again, because everyone's motivated by their own profit within those nodes, sometimes things butt up against each other, where marine terminals are very cautious of ordering too much labor. And if they have too much labor, then they're paying more for labor, where for us, the more labor that's on the dock, the faster we're going to get our trucks turned in and out. So sometimes those things will bat up against each other. And we understand why decisions are being made, again, really on a capital basis more often than not. And so understanding that and appreciating those challenges only goes so far. So we don't have control over those other nodes. Those other nodes will try to do as much as they can to possibly control the trucking side of things. It's, you know, we always kind of joke it's the lowest rung on the supply chain ladder and the first one to get stepped on in the process. Trucking, again, people don't really like trucks. They don't know about trucks. It's just they're kind of a necessary evil. They're like, when are we going to get driverless trucks? You know, all this mumbo jumbo. But where we try to affect the policy, again, it really comes down to these coalitions and relationships. Individually, we highlight things that go on at the terminals like turn times. We've had a study since 2014, that's been tracking turn times at the ports of LA, Long Beach, and Oakland. We'll be up in Seattle, Tacoma here starting this summer. So we track those turn times. We publish them out to folks who ask for them or do contribute to it and give it back to the marine terminals so they can look and, you know, kind of judge their performance against the other marine terminal operators. We give out awards for it also as well, both in LA, Long Beach, and Oakland for fastest turn time over a 12, 13-month period. And so the marine terminals take pride in that, and they want to do better. So they're doing everything they can to speed us through. Their throughput is important for them because that's how they're making money also, and the number of containers they lift on and off of a ship, more or less. So these type of things, not only in that coalition building side to try to influence policy, but then also with trying to highlight some of the good things that are going on and then encourage that better behavior through recognition, which ultimately may have an overall impact because then people want to be recognized as being a good actor within the industry. So all those things kind of on top of each other are really how we try to influence policy on the state level, local level here. And when I say local, you know, referring to Los Angeles, Long Beach, but even more local within the port authorities themselves, which are divisions of the city, but they function independently with their own budgets, their own decision-making. They are sort of under City Hall, more or less. So again, maintaining those relationships and trying to come up with a coalition of like-minded individuals is the best way to try to impact policy. And I feel like we've been successful primarily through that relationship building, what we've been doing for many years.
Amazing. I mean, like one of the questions I had, the next one was about collaboration with industries like logistics and supply chain management. And I think you gestured to those quite well. I think that goes on to my next question. What role does the HTA have in playing in terms of shaping the future of goods movement and transportation infrastructure in Southern California and beyond?
It all comes back down to, education, right? That is probably, in my view, the most important thing to try to help influence better productivity within the supply chain. Because as we can be more productive, again, it comes back to that capital argument, you're making more money. People like making money. It is what it is, right? No, we're not doing this because it's fun. Well, I am, because I need to get out more. But this is, to me, such a critical industry, and how we can highlight that to the entire economy, I think is helps to build on that and to improve things, because people see bottlenecks, right? The trucking industry is in nationwide is almost a $1 trillion industry. And so you look at a lot of private equity that's been coming into the marketplace because they see, well, hey, this is a very lucrative, you know, opportunity potentially. But we're also very inefficient. And where there's technology, where technology can be applied to help increase efficiency within the larger trucking industry is very alluring to technological companies, to this private equity, angel investors, et cetera. And there's no shortage of people who have tried, but the industry in and of itself is just, it's not broken or anything. It's just, this is just how it functions. It's not perfect where, you know, there are trucks that are running empty miles. Should they be doing that? Well, they are. That's just kind of how it works. But you're not always going to get a load from where you're taking something to where you're sending it back. So when you think about like logistics planning, and especially in very large trucking organizations, they try to do as much as they can to limit those empty miles, the deadhead miles, as we call them. But inevitably, you're going to end up with some. It's just you're repositioning equipment, or your drivers need to be repositioned. Something, there's always something that kind of prevents that efficiency enhancement. And so coming back to that educational side of things, where if somebody's out there and can figure all this out, I mean, I'm sure that they, you know, they would do very well for themselves. But the answer is not just purely autonomous driving trucks, right? It's not robots replacing human beings isn't necessarily the answer to try to make this more efficient. But that is, I believe, part of the equation in the future, especially in over the road. I feel like there's a good opportunity there. So that might help. And our role as an association is to really, again, that convening, facilitating conversations between technology providers, between trucking companies, between even private equity to an extent, of talking about where are there opportunities where we can get better, where we can be more efficient. And we're happy to act as that conduit for that conversation and ideally catalyze something that maybe would make a difference at the end of the day.
So basically you're saying that our next conversation should be Skynet and trucking.
Yes, Skynet. Exactly. Exactly. AI is here and it's existing and it's today. You know, that's, you bring up a funny point, right? Because what we're seeing now, especially with AI, is you have folks who are seeking trucking service by utilizing AI as a means of outreach. And so AI will just send out an email, it'll generate an email, it'll modify it for whatever's necessary, and it'll send it to thousands of trucking companies asking for a rate on, you know, all-in rates from point A to point B. It also can do things like when you get an invoice or you get a bill, the pro software can read this stuff and then go and populate it somewhere else. So it is bringing that, some of those more mundane tasks, I think, in removing them out of the human hands, which, you know, it is what it is, right? But I think that that can help be more, drive more efficiency there, because it's not just on the autonomous driving truck side. And I don't know, me as a part of the motoring public in general, the Waymo cars kind of, you know, weird me out a little bit right now. Yeah. And I'm getting used to it. You know, I'm not a total curmudgeon, but the 80,000 pound driverless vehicle is something that I think the average person takes a little pause with. It's just, you know, robots aren't perfect, obviously, right? Skynet, I think, is the perfect example of how when AI goes bad, right? So, you know, you're trying to think about how we can do better, what kind of safeguards or whatever is there, you know, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, like, my partner and I drive up and down the 5 all the time to go back to the Bay to visit family, and seeing all the trucks go up and down that corridor, and like, right. I can't even imagine driverless trucks. I'm sure one day we'll get there, yeah. But for now, I'm like, as a millennial, older millennial, I'm like, I don't know, man.
it's weird. You know, that movie Wolverine, that X-Men spinoff, you know, they had like a separate highway where you had these, which looked like containers on basically like skateboards that were fully automated, right? But they had their own highway. And I think that that makes more sense, but you building all that infrastructure is really expensive. Yeah. And then you have to make sure that all the vehicles can talk to each other. I mean, we could all be driving autonomous vehicles if all the vehicles were connected with each other. And then that creates vulnerabilities in different ways. So I'm hearing you. And the five, especially, it's long, it's straight. That's a good opportunity for autonomous vehicles. And the LiDAR technology in autonomous trucks is some of the most sophisticated in the world. So the technology's there. The capability is there. There's a willingness by the industry to entertain it. But I don't think that the public's quite ready yet.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a hard thing to get over. And highway safety advocates especially are opposed to that and increased weights and things that could make things more efficient. But yeah, nevertheless, you know, Skynet.
So. Skynet. Just going back to inefficiency, I think, you know, one of the things I was curious about was what are the biggest systemic challenges does the Harbor Trucking Association see in the harbor trucking sector? And how are you guys addressing them?
You know, I'm always going to come back to the education. I think that is like one of the most important roles that HTA has. And the advocacy side is very important as well. We need to have a voice at the tables. It's, you know, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu or whatever the saying is. So that is critical. The advocacy side is most definitely very critical. But at the end of the day, it's all about education. And for us to try to drive and affect change in the system, in the supply chain network, it's really about education. Because there's no shortage of challenges, right? It's always something, as the saying goes. And because there's so many different actors in those nodes, in the large, you know, in the buddy comedy, that when we think about how can we get these nodes to work better together, really, I think is a function of education, because one node doesn't really understand or appreciate what another node is going through. And then you have some nodes that don't care, right? They're like, whatever, not my problem, not my department, call somebody else. So if we can bring people together and kind of bridge that gap and of that knowledge gap of individual nodes and individual, whether it's industries or companies or ocean carriers that are, you know, owned in foreign countries that have very fragmented, you know, collections department, billing department, you know, operations department, vessel department, all these different things. If they're not all working together and firing all in the same centers, even internally in a company, you can have problems, which then drive more inefficiencies within the system, because within that, you know, the vertical, that whatever that node is in within that particular company can have its own roadblocks to being efficient. So that educational piece goes not only for the individual nodes, but also for companies themselves to address and kind of take a look in the mirror to see, are they contributing negatively to the supply chain by decreasing efficiency or, you know, making things harder than they should be, for lack of a better way to put it. And I think that really is, again, boils down to education. And as we can open people's eyes and minds to think about what they're doing, how they're doing it, how they could do it better, ideally, we'll see some results. But again, it can become very compartmentalized within the supply chain itself, where everyone's sort of protecting their own little fiefdom, and it can be challenging to get through to people sometimes. So the more of a platform we have to talk about that, whether it's social media or through our memberships or through media or whatever it is, to get people to think more holistically and to say, oh, you know, wasn't HTA talking about that? Or wasn't one of our partner organizations talking about something like that? Like, let's dig into this. Let's understand it and internalize it so we can react appropriately.
I mean, I think that's an apropos statement to make. I mean, you know, and a nice pathway, because talking about education, us being in Cal State Long Beach right now, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about your partnerships with educational institutions, right? How does HTA collaborate with educational institutions and to create pathways for students?
We have a great partnership here with Cal State Long Beach and with the Global Logistics Professional Program. And as you mentioned, I'm a part-time lecturer for that program. So we, you know, we lend ourselves and time. We do a golf tournament where we raise money for scholarships here at the university. We work with also our internally within our own organization to try to do these educational webinars and whatnot that everybody is invited to, whether you're in the industry or not. And I think that is critical to try to, again, it's about that information and getting, especially like younger people, to look at this industry as something that is very positive. I mean, there is great career pathways within the supply chain or logistics world. It's not just being a broker or driving a truck. There is every facet of a business is contained within one of those nodes in the supply chain. And that's several, again, as I mentioned, whether it's the port authorities, trucking companies, marine terminal operators, ocean carriers, the rail line, and then the shipping side, ag export, ag import, commodities, general commodities. Again, a great opportunity to learn things. And that's why, you know, we are very supportive of the GLP here at Cal State Long Beach, because it's a great way for folks to kind of enter into the marketplace. Whether you're a young person, whether you're mid-career, whether you're looking to kind of change careers, or this industry, the supply chain industry, is always looking for talented people who are willing to work, right? You got to put the time in, obviously. It's not in nothing, if, you know, if it was easy, everybody would do it, right? So however we can try to promote that and partner with institutions or other organizations that are encouraging that component of sort of, you know, helping outsiders see this industry as a positive thing, we'll do it. So whenever we're approached, we're always very, very willing and intrigued by moving to something that is going to expand that educational scope to have folks better understand our organization, first and foremost, and then mostly throughout the rest of the industry, too. It's critical. It is such an important component of our economy. The more people understand it, I think the more they'll appreciate it.
Awesome. I mean, talking about the GLP program, or Global Logistics Professional, and what you mentioned, putting the time in, what skills and certifications are most in demand for students looking to enter the port, logistics, or trucking industries, do you think?
I think that the first thing is always going to be that willingness to see something through the end. You got to have the discipline and dedication. The other stuff you can teach, right? But if you don't have that, if you don't have that drive to want to do something, I think, you know, and I know that there's a lot of criticism out there about various, you know, generations or work ethics or what have you. You know, I'm not ancient, but I've definitely been working since I was, you know, 16 years old in warehouses or waiting tables or whatever was necessary to get by. So I've always been working. And when we see somebody wants to come into our industry who has a good head on their shoulders and is willing to learn and be a sponge, I've seen them be very successful. And that's really, a lot of it has to do with attitude. And your attitude is what's going to drive your success at the end of the day. You got a bad attitude, you're not going to go very far. You got a good attitude, you're willing to learn, you're willing to put the time and energy in. That is the recipe for success. There is somewhere in the supply chain that you could fit into if on a very lucrative career pathway just by having the right attitude. Of course, skills help, right? Basic math is a good place to start, right? You don't need to be a calculus major. You don't need to be a chemical engineer to do this stuff, right? But having some level of, not even, I won't even say like business background from an MBA perspective, but just sort of understanding how think commerce works, right? We're all consumers. So we should be experts in it. We're buying things, we're possibly selling things, you know, every day. We're salespeople also in the self, that we're selling ourselves, whether it's to our professors or to our spouses or whomever it is. We're always, you know, us humans as individuals should always kind of be on that road of sort of, you know, promoting yourself. So the attitude combined with the ability to, you know, think critically is important. But again, some of that stuff can be taught. And there is a lot of folks in this industry are more than willing to bring somebody along if they've got the right attitude. And I've seen it firsthand. Advanced education is great. You know, 4-year college degree kind of shows future employers that you're able to stick to something and get through a degree. Even an associate's degree is good. Just showing potential employers within our industry that an individual has the capability to see something through to the end can be a big difference maker. So bringing that attitude with some, you know, basic knowledge, I think, of anything is helpful. And then just being able to think critically in regards of like how this all works in the larger picture. And like I said, you can find some great mentors and be brought along by folks, but if you don't have that right attitude up front, that's going to be a challenge.
Yeah. That reminded me of is the conversation we had with someone I interviewed a couple interviews back, Willie Zuniga, who said that, you know, how do we pay it forward to younger for generations, younger folks, right? Showing them the opportunities that they assessed or were able to gain in their lives. So I think, you know, something that I live by is we lift as we climb. And, you know, how do we raise those who haven't had those chances, right? And attitude is one of the big things. I think that also speaks to another question or another discussion we have at the College of Professional and Continuing Education is that, you know, a lot of our students want to get into these industries, want to get into these jobs, but there's this idea that they have to have an MA, that they have to have a PhD, that they have to have some background in this, that they're saying that this field is not for me, right? That I don't belong here. How can students from non-logistics backgrounds transition into roles within the harbor trucking ecosystem?
Honestly, and I had to think about it for one, just for a second there, hence the dead air, you know, I'm always willing to give people the benefit of the doubt. It doesn't matter if you're a fine arts major or a philosophy major or, you know, a political science person like myself, you know, I didn't have a background in logistics except for working in warehouses when I was going to high school and in college. So it never was something to me where I thought that, oh, well, this is going to help, you know, build up my perspective later so I can run a nonprofit association. That never crossed my mind one time. I was a fellow for the California State Senate. I came out of that role and moved into the California Trucking Association. Sure, I've been around trucks. You see them every day. You mentioned the five, you know, that's where I was up in Northern Nevada. We would see them on I-80 all the time. But it never dawned on me that there's like, wow, there's a whole ecosystem that's supporting what's inside that truck. The 53-foot trailers that I was unloading my eighth grade summer, you know, leading into my freshman year, I wasn't thinking about that larger ecosystem. And so kind of coming back to it, just having first that interest in something. And, you know, there's jobs out there, whether it's Indeed or Glassdoor or whatever, you know, various hiring areas that, yeah, for the higher up positions where you're doing a lot of operational stuff, of course, you're going to need experience for that. But an entry level, just getting your foot in the door. Again, I've worked at, you know, I think four different warehouses. And that is a great place to start. Doesn't mean you have to continue your career there, but you ask questions, you observe, you try to talk to the managers or other people who've been working there, try to understand the processes, contribute to the overall process, whether you see improvements, opportunity for improvement anywhere. I think just having that, the open eyes, the can-do kind of attitude, and then a willingness to follow through, I think is you can be successful in trucking, in shipping, ocean carrier. You know, again, having a four-year college degree is a good thing from an employer's standpoint because they see that you can start and finish something. That is really what it's all about. There's a lot of people that are not doing anything related to their field of study while they were an undergrad or even in a graduate sense. Of course, there's the pathways of lawyer, doctor, accountant. Those are kind of the traditional things that you need specialized training for. In our industry, you know, we take all kinds. There is nothing that we would ever hold against somebody from an educational standpoint. Could you be overqualified? Yeah, potentially. But if you're willing to go work on the dock or you're willing to go pick up the phone or do maybe some cold calling or do some accounting work or sweep the warehouse floor, whatever it is. If there's a willingness there, then, and you know, we're always looking for talented people. And of course, if you want to learn how to drive a truck, we always need drivers, always. The robots are not going to be replacing drivers in the port anytime soon, contrary to popular belief. So, you know, if that's something that folks like, if they like being behind the wheel, the windshield time, going and moving containers out of the ports, you know, I really recommend for people, whenever they're in LA, Long Beach, and near the ports, to drive around in the port itself. It's fascinating to see the scale that's being moved there, where millions of containers are coming through there each year. It is the largest gateway in the Western Hemisphere, and you can really appreciate that when you're down there, either on the water in a port tour, the ports offer them. where you drive, you know, through each port on a vessel, small little passenger cruise vessel, and, or, you know, even driving around. So again, for me, it's all about that attitude and willingness to work. And if you don't have a background in something, it doesn't matter. If the supply chain is, you know, it was flying under the radar for a long time until COVID hit. And then everyone started frantically buying toilet paper for whatever reason. Still, nobody really understands why that happened. But, you know, we saw how critical the goods movement chain is. And then we saw the phenomenon of folks, you know, staying at home. They're ordering stuff on Amazon. Warehouses get depleted. Shippers sort of freak out because now they have empty shelves and they overorder the old just in case. And it started building up in warehouses. Next thing you know, we have 109 ships at anchor. We're on the nightly news every single night. You know, that's how I got on 60 Minutes. Still to this day, I can't believe it. because people are like, huh, the supply chain, what is that, right? And now that we've kind of come full circle, we've got this uncertainty with the tariffs, the media is in a feeding frenzy again, that people are like, huh, the supply chain, what is that, you know? I think we need to have more regular thinking about the supply chain in our normal day-to-day lives and appreciate where stuff comes from, how it gets there, what conveyance is being used, where it's being made, how it's being made. Is it being made sustainably? Is it being, you know, are you using the right kind of inputs? Where are those inputs coming from? I mean, you don't need to get down to the super nitty-gritty, but at the end of the day, it's like being more mindful about that, I think, can serve a lot of people well. And that creates more opportunities to understand that. It's like, hey, well, how did this get here? This whatever it is, right? Thinking about that and then finding out the process of how it happened. There is a job associated with every single step in a manufacturing process from, you know, conception, contemplation of whatever that, you know, tchotchke is or whatever, you know, whatever you're making, all the way through the final consumption of it. Every step has a job that's associated with somewhere in the supply chain. And I think the more people understand that, the more they'll see that opportunities.
Nice. Shifting gears a little bit, but staying on the same track of mind, you know, as I mentioned in your bio, you're the chief executive officer of the Harbor Trucking Association since 2021. However, in past conversations, you've shared that your background includes experience in theater. An unconventional path for someone in your current role. How has a unique foundation shaped your leadership style or influenced your approach to the work you do every day?
You know, it's funny you should mention that. But in junior college, I did a lot of theater, right? For me, it helped with my public speaking and to get over that fear of being up in front of audiences specifically, which I have to do very frequently in this current role. And it's also helped me understand how to deliver information, right? That if you believe in something enough, you can get other people to believe in it with you and to take the journey with you, right? And I think that that's one cool thing that arts can really do and really enhance someone's ability to kind of to take you on a journey somewhere, whether it's visual art, graphic art, whether it's theater, you know, filmmaking. There are so many great things out there, artistic-wise, music especially. And bringing people through an experience, I think, is what makes art so amazing. And for me, when I was doing theater, I've also played, you know, I don't even like to call myself a musician. I know how to play the guitar. I've played drums. I've been in bands. We've played shows. It's all about that journey and kind of bringing people along with you. So for me, using those skills, for lack of a better way to put it, and applying that to my current role is really all about communication and effective communication and bringing people across and having them think of things maybe in a different way, framing things so people can understand it and internalize it and appreciate it, to humanize it. For this is not like the most exciting stuff, right? Like moving a container is not very sexy. It's not the cool, awesome, sexy thing that people would think of in, like, you know, the supply chain. Nobody has said the supply chain is sexy ever. Maybe I just said it now, but then that's it. But I want to, you know, help people understand and appreciate it and, like, get excited about it. And when you can bring passion to something and to really deliver it and to connect with people on a humanistic level, I feel that it just goes so much further. And so that's what I think that did for me then when I was doing it. I was always interested in it. My, you know, I'm an only child, so I was always, you know, kind of entertaining myself all the time as I was growing up. And that just translated into when I was going to college. I was like, oh, theater, that sounds cool. Like, why not? But I really enjoyed it. And again, it's also, you're part of a team. Like, you are working together with other people to try to move towards the same destination and to bring all these other people along with you. So it takes coordination. So you need interpersonal communication skills. You need to be able to follow direction, right? And you got to see it through to the end. Everyone, you will always be able to see somebody, you know, an actor or even a musician, if they're not like committed to it, you can tell. And I think that that starts degrading away from the experience of folks when they're, whatever they're experiencing for that matter. If you're dealing with somebody who's kind of phoning it in it a little bit, right? It can be distracting on the one hand, but it's not inspiring. And we got to inspire people in this world. You need to be inspirational, in my mind, for people to really appreciate stuff and to want to get, you know, be excited about something.
Yeah, the world's too chaotic outside, right?
So yeah.
How do we bring inspiration and light to the world? I mean, as a former educator, you know, I used to teach college. You know, when you said take them on the journey with you, that resonated. And I think, like, something that we can end on that's very uplifting is, what advice would you have for students who are interested in the trucking related industry, or similar industries like that?
Sure. Don't be scared, right?
Yeah.
Every journey starts with the first step. And, you know, it's almost cliche sounding, but it's true. And in my experience within the GLP, we've had people come from much different outside industries who just like, I want to change. What's this supply chain thing? Like, what's up with it? They jump into it and they find they really enjoy it. Like, it's not, you know, yes, it can be complicated and nuanced and frustrating, but that's, you know, c'est la vie, right? Such is life. That's how it is. If it's easy, everybody would do it. And the more you put in, the more you get out, right? And so I think it's just a matter of taking that first step. It doesn't have to be in trucking, but the supply chain, you know, we need talented people who are wanting to be committed to it, because it's not going anywhere. It doesn't matter if we reshore everything back into the United States of America. We're making every single thing here, which I don't think is going to happen at the scale as some would probably want it to. But we still need a supply chain, no matter what. Stuff needs to get from point A to point B. And I think that that should be sexy to people. And maybe we need to do a better job as supply chain actors of making it sexy again, right? Or if it was, I don't know if again, if I can say again, just making it sexy. Period. Or maybe sexy is not the right word, but attractive.
I already think trucking is so sexy.
Right. Absolutely. I do too. You know, so I think for people who want to get into it, I mean, there's a way to get it. You go and talk to somebody who's filling up at a diesel fuel stop and just walk up to him and say, hey, like, you know, how's your day going? Yeah. What do you do? Who do you work for? You look at the name on the side of the truck. You have a DOT number. You can look that up online to see what that company's all about. It'll tell you how many trucks they're running, where they're based out of, you know? And I mean, I think that that's just the first step. I mean, the other thing too, is that the largest trucking companies in the country started basically with one person, one truck. Even the containerized shipping industry started with a guy with one truck, Malcolm McLean. He was a trucker. And he's the one who kind of really drove containerization. Containers have been around for a long time, but the standardization of containers really became a more of a phenomenon, especially the Vietnam War and then into the 80s. You saw that standardization just take off. And it has changed the world. There's some great books out there that are about the container, specifically one called The Box. You know, it's not a very creative title, but it gets the point across. And, you know, reading that for me is fascinating. But again, I work in this industry and I enjoy it. But somebody reading something and kind of internalizing something like that is also a good first step to say, like, what's up with these containers? You know, where did they come from? The story of it is fascinating, and how it has literally changed the world and how we consume and produce things. It's at a scale that, you know, and of course, there's some criticism, China and devaluation of their currency and all this jazz. But regardless, it has created something that I don't think anyone really imagined was possible, this huge economy associated with it. So that, I think, is a good place to start. You know, ask the questions, do some research, read a couple books, go talk to the guy, you know, or gal filling up at the fuel stop. See what they have to say for themselves. I guarantee you're going to get a mixed bag of answers. So you might want to ask a few of them to get, you know, a good control group so you know, where you can fit in. But the opportunities are out there everywhere. And it's just, again, you just got to take that first step.
I mean, what you said reminds me of a conversation we had with Noel Hascaba with the Port of Long Beach. You know, I mean, we live in such a globalized world, right? And so, like, there's opportunities everywhere within the supply chain and, you know, trucking with the ports, right? And so opportunities at jobs at every level. You just have to go out there and ask. You have to go out there and research and do that work to get in there. Opportunities abound. So I think that's a great place to end this conversation, because it's true. There's so much out there that folks just don't know about, and they just have to do the work and get out there and find it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. So I want to thank you, Matt, for coming on. Thank you for tuning into Pacing Your Future.
We hope today's installment has inspired you and provided valuable insights into the dynamic world of industry and innovation. Stay tuned with us for more stories, opportunities, and expert advice to help you navigate and shape your future. Until next time, keep pacing your future with confidence and curiosity.